Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You will find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's dive in. My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host. I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. What we're going to be discussing is the topic of rent relief in the post-pandemic office environment. You may be hearing that title and saying, oh, wow, another coronavirus episode. Well, yes, and this goes to something that's been at my intersection of my brilliance and my passion for well nigh 20 years now. In other words, almost my entire post-college professional career, both the part where I worked for companies and the larger portion where I've been an entrepreneurial business leader, the changes in the office environment, the extent to which people report to offices to work, and how that's going to impact changes in the workplace, changes in the real estate function behind that because you need to buy and lease a space. We're going to cover a bunch of stuff. And to help guide us through that, we have somebody who I am very excited to be able to say I can relate to on a first name basis. His name is Adam Collins. And let me tell you about Adam. I hear you laughing, man. Adam is a managing director at MGA, which is a full-service real estate advisory firm focused on caring for the needs of all types of users of commercial real estate. Adam is responsible for identifying and representing existing and expanding nonprofits, professional services, technology, and startup companies throughout the DMV. He is an expert when it comes to real estate office space and has worked with office users spanning from small, economically appealing subleases to full building users in the heart of downtown Washington, D.C., one of my favorite cities in the world. Adam's focus solely on tenant representation has allowed him to gain a deep understanding of the needs of a business owner. Oh my, I didn't even notice this. I'm a Penn Stater, Adam's a Penn Stater. With a BS in economics, I was a BA in political science. He currently holds his real estate license in DC, VA, and MD, which is Washington, DC, Virginia, and Maryland. I love that area. I used to visit there all the time when I lived on the East Coast. One of my best friends from college lives in Alexandria, Virginia. Love the place. And I got to say that one place where Adam and I are different is I don't have a real estate license, at least not at this time. So Adam Collins, my fellow Penn Stater, come on in. The weather's fine.
All right. Well, first of all, we are
Penn State.
There it is.
Now say thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I know that cheer all too well. I was actually a cheerleader at Penn State for 4 years while I was there. So I'm full of Penn State pride, and it's always great to talk to another Nittany Lion.
Yeah, and a man I can relate to on a first name basis. I'll probably bring that up like four or five more times.
It's okay. We've got a lot in common.
So let's before we dive into this topic, and there are so many questions I have about this, and I know this is something that's pertinent to some of our users as well, not only because of the COVID thing, but just in general, the shifts between working in an office and working from home and some of the things that are involved in that, you're going to help us with some of the practical elements of making this happen. Before we do that, let's take a quick step back and tell us a little bit about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. I read off your bio, but tell me a little bit more about the story.
Yeah, so I got interested in real estate quite a while ago, back when I was in high school. And the interest came from, you know, my family's been in the Alexandria, Virginia area for maybe 125, maybe 150 years. And they've left quite a mark on the entire community. And it was always one of those things where you try and figure out the way that, how can I help people, but also how can I do something more than just pushing papers, or more than just creating something out of nothing, right? I wanted to have a tangible effect on the community that I could really see. And so that's really where real estate got started, and it didn't help or didn't hurt that also reading the Forbes top 100 list, all of them had real estate as one of their sources of wealth. And so that got me considering, I'm like, what does this word real estate mean outside of the real estate agent that my parents bought their house from? And so I just dove in, right? Took a look at, opportunities between real estate investment trusts and, house flipping and real estate investors or residential. So I looked at all types of real estate and as a profession when I was in like college, kind of, just browsing the internet, and met a gentleman who owned a commercial real estate brokerage firm. And I was volunteering with his charity. And through that, I just started talking to him and interned with him, shadowed him, walked around and figured out this is actually a pretty cool life. And it's something that you can really end up helping not only small business owners, but also big businesses. And when you can really align a business's real estate strategy with their business objectives and their goals, it's pretty cool at what that does for a company, whether it's, giving them negotiate enough free rent to allow them to launch a new product or to hire a new employee. There's different ways that you can get creative and really leverage real estate, whether it's buying or selling. So I was just fascinated by that, by the creativity of it. And that's kind of what led me to the job, but also keeps me in it is really the creativity aspect of it, and how every day is unique and there's always a different problem to solve.
That's awesome. And what I find interesting is how you have found your way into this very interesting niche of helping companies rent real or buy, I guess, real estate for their businesses, office space and things like that. So let's start broad and then we'll bring it in. Overall, how do you think the office environment may change in light of everything that's going on lately?
Well, I guess if you're talking about the physical office environment or the economic, like the lease structure. So
let's have fun and do both.
Yeah. So I guess we'll first start off just the way that we negotiate on commercial real estate and the way that we think about lease terms. My firm and myself are 100% just focused on representing occupiers of office space. We never represent landlords or anything, but I think it's one of those industries where it has been slow to adapt to the times, and it's kind of almost a joke in the industry that everybody knows that it's just a little bit outdated, and even some of my clients kind of gripe about how outdated it is. So I think going forward, what we'll see is more flexibility when it comes to office leasing. Now most companies are locked into a 5, 7, or 10 year lease. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the future of office space leasing.
Right.
A 10-year lease can be great for some companies, but I think we're seeing more and more that the demand for flexibility is there. And I think landlords are going to have to find some ways to adapt to that. So I think that's going to be one of the bigger changes of commercial real estate is that, in terms of the actual physical office environment, take COVID away from it. I think people have woken up to the fact that even the way that we all work might be a little bit antiquated. And the fact that, I don't know. It depends on who you are. For me, it's 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the office. But there are a lot of people that are, just 9 to 5, right? Maybe that's not necessarily needed. Maybe you can work, 10 to 3 and then still get home in time for your kids' soccer practice or to cook dinner. Maybe that's okay because you have the technology at your fingertips, really. I mean, not just your laptop, but a lot of times your cell phone can do a lot of the work that you need to do. So I think that we're going to see more flexibility both just in how employees work and then how offices are leased. But I think there's still a place for an office. although the footprints might be shrinking, the two words that I'm hearing from most of my clients are, we need an office because it maintains our culture and our collaboration, right? Those are the two C's that I keep hearing from all my clients. And having gone back to the office, we're on our third week back into the office at my firm, and I can attest to that. Was I quite as productive as when I was working from home with no distractions? No, I've not been quite as productive, but
Right.
I mean, being able to just pop in to one of my coworkers' offices and, collaborate on deliverable or a quick question or problem, where we don't have to set up a Zoom or a phone call, and then get buy-in from the guy next to us who we wouldn't have usually brought in on the phone call because, just it didn't pertain to him, but maybe he has a good idea. It's just been enlightening in the fact of, I'm now noticing how much energy I get from being around just such brilliant minds, and that leads to another thing is the mentorship opportunities that are so necessary for a lot of companies, whether it's a nonprofit, a law firm, just any organization that's looking to attract and retain their talent, and groom that talent to be executives one day. That mentorship opportunity, I don't think that you can have over Zoom, or at least not to the extent that you can when you're in the office and you see people, at least for a little bit each day.
Now, one of the reasons that we have this Business Creators Radio show that you're listening to right now be an audio show rather than video, aside from the fact that God gave me a face for radio, fortunately, he also gave me the voice, so at least he was consistent, is if this were video, I would be required to sit upright in my chair with my hands in front of me. And if I were wearing a jacket, I'd have to sit on the tail so that the shoulders evened out. And I'd have to find where the camera lens is and find a way to look into it at the same time, checking to make sure I'm looking into it and people see my eyes going back and forth. And would have to do this like it was some kind of mainstream news program or something like that. And how boring. Now, what I've told people is not only am I the host of the Business Creators Radio Show, I'm also in the front row because we have some of the greatest people who come through in our guest lineup who share great things. And what I wouldn't want people to see is rather than having that media anchor pose, I'm taking furious notes because what our guests say to me inspires things. And what I want our listeners to recognize in the Business Creators Radio Show is we've done our job. If you feel like you are a fly on the wall listening to a private mastermind where we exchange ideas and we come up with better solutions and better concepts than either of us could have done on our own. So, Adam, that little answer to that question inspired a bunch of things.
Well, that's good.
First of all, let me ask you this, and not the socially programmed answer, but the actual scientific answer, if you know it for yourself. Do you consider yourself more introverted or extroverted?
I think that there is some sort of mix between the two where
There is, but
I
yeah.
display extroverted characteristics, but deep down inside, I'm 100% okay being very introverted.
Well, do you get tired or do you get excited the more you're hanging around other people? The reason I'm bringing that up is because you mentioned the charge you get from interacting with coworkers. For me, it's like, oh God, coworkers. Not that I don't love the people, but it's like, please don't come by my cubicle.
Yeah, for me, I definitely get excited to see people, but the way that I work, and I'm a little bit infamous in our office, is I am a very heads down kind of guy. I could go a very long time without picking my head up, or well, I guess my screen is up, but without looking around. But it is nice to have those breaks, and I do love them. I don't mean to be rude, but I'm a very focused person on the task at hand. So I turn when I'm in the office, I definitely turn on my introverted hat. But when I'm out meeting people at a networking event and all that, I have no problem being an extrovert, but I do get a little, At the end of the week, after, you know, 4 or 5 network events, that's a lot for me.
Well, yeah, and that's also a lot of logistics and everything else. Would you actually appear, at least on the surface, this is an oversimplification, but actually ambiverted, which means characteristics of both. And I brought that up because you mentioned one of the values of being in an office is the opportunity to have meetings with people and see them and stuff like that, which is something that would drain me. I was involved in a startup several years ago that had acquired office space. I also had my own business, which I've been running out of the home since the very beginning. Well, actually, usually out of my balcony, although it's a little hot today to do that. So I'm in the air conditioning for a rare change. And it was asked of me, well, how much do you plan to come down and spend time here in the office? And I said, well, we have the weekly staff meetings, so I guess I'll come in for that. Other than that, it's just a matter of when my presence is absolutely or absolutely positively necessary. But don't you just get excited about the idea that you could just, you know, knock on the door of the office right next to you and say, hey, got a sec? Or maybe 3 or 4 of us get together and we say, hey, let's go in the conference room and have a meeting. And I'm thinking, these are the things that I don't leave my cats at home alone for. So for some folks, and I just wanted to have you and I go back and forth on that, because it illustrates that there are different personalities that come into office spaces. There are folks out there who are rejoicing over the bug, not because they want to see people get sick or anything, but because now they don't have to commute to some office. There have been studies done, scientific studies, that have shown that on average, the typical person working from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday in an office space delivers a little under 3 hours per day of actual productive time. The rest of it is breaks, drop-bys, water cooler, office politics, stupid phone calls, having to fuss over emails lest you offend somebody by failing to word something properly, dealing with email chains and email hell and email, get rid of the email and all that. That's where the rest of the time goes. That was brought up because they're testing the efficacy of people working from home and figuring, could they get that same 2 hours and 54 minutes or even more from someone working at home? So think about it. You don't have to travel anywhere. You may have kids there, so you can have somebody come in for a few hours. Maybe you homeschool too. So they also figured out that homeschooling is not like going to a school where the student is there for 7 hours a day and they have 43-minute classes and 5 minutes between each class. To actually homeschool a child, by the majority of the models that are used for that, typically takes really only a couple hours a day. So a person can put in a full work day, a full homeschool day, and still have time to go to the park and less time than it takes to do just one of the activities I mentioned above. So some folks find that working from home is helpful. And as far as the, meeting with people who pay me money, once they reach a certain level of being a consulting client of mine, know that they can look on my Skype, and if they see my dot is green, they can type, got a sec. If I have one, I'll say, hit me. If I don't have one, I'll say, later. Or, hang on, I'll get back to you, and then I'll say, hit me when I'm ready. So when I look at it that way, I see that there are some ways you can still have that, hey, let's get together for a second, and it doesn't have to involve picking up a phone and dialing a bunch of numbers, because Skype, you literally hit a button. Zoom, you're just using your standard Zoom room, you say, here's a link, I'm in there, wait for me, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The model that I'm seeing being discussed with this whole COVID thing, because some folks are just going to say, you know what, I've gotten a taste of working from home and I'm staying here. So I don't care if you open the office or not. Either you let me work from home, or I've been speaking with your competitor and they're willing to let me work from home and I'll just go work for them. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I think
my final thought here, and then I'm going to turn you loose, is that a balance between those two things of the in-person experience versus the work from home experience, two models I'm seeing, one of which is everybody comes in for a quarterly meeting. The other is you create sort of a hybrid where everybody comes into the office once per day or 1 day per week and then work from home the other 4 days, or they, and going along with that, they may stagger it so that a percentage of the people are in the office for each of those 5 days, which allows for maintenance of social distancing protocols. Now, I'm going to turn you loose.
Yeah, I think what you hit on about the time, right? And how much extra time you have while working from home. If you're only doing 3 hours of work and then 2 hours with the kids, educating them. What I've seen is some people get that feeling of, if I'm not working from the same time period, or even longer, you know, do you get a little bit of that guilty feeling, right?
If you, take a break, I know what you're talking about.
You take like an hour break or so, like in the middle of the day, you might not have anything pressing to do, but you know, sometimes you're like, well, shouldn't I be doing something? And so you end up working a lot more. And yeah, you definitely get more done. I mean, if I had a tracker on me to show how much head down work I'm doing at the office from 7 till 7, I a lot of it is, you know, now that we're back at the office, a lot of it is going to be walking around a little bit. You know, I like to take an hour, like not an hour, but like, you know, once an hour, I'll take a break. I'll walk around the office. I'll do a loop, say hi to people, you know, make sure my eyes can readjust to not looking at my screen. So you end up being more focused and working longer, but maybe more stressful while at home because it's just constant work and you don't get, depending on what your home situation is also.
Right.
And not everybody has a luxurious home situation. I think the CEO of the company's home office probably looks a lot different than the associates who's probably in a one bedroom or studio apartment.
Yeah.
Working from their laptop on their bed. So I think that again goes back to the need for flexibility, because you want to balance the ideas and the thought. And now that this whole remote working thing is out there and it's in the ethos, I think smart companies are going to give employees the option. Me personally, I would not take a job at a company that was 100% remote.
Right.
So I don't think that a company should just limit this position saying, hey, look, this position is just 100% remote. You can do it from anywhere, because you might not get maybe it depends on what the position is, but you might not get the best candidate, because the best candidate might be the kind of person who's like me that wants to be up and walking around and away from the house and kind of separate the work life from the home life. But but you never know. And that's why I think that you kind of need that flexibility. I think 67% of workers here in the DC area that were surveyed said that the social interactions with their coworkers was the leading reason that they were excited to come back to the office. And that's, again, goes back to the collaboration, and not necessarily just the work collaboration, but also the, hey, it's 6 o'clock. Let's go out and get a drink. Let's, you know, go catch up and learn more about each other and develop a friendship or relationship of some sort, or a mentor, a protege relationship. And so that's the kind of things that when it's the forced remote work, you miss out on. But when it's a hybrid, which I think is probably where a lot of people are going to go, is a lot more of this hybrid where you can choose to work remotely, or you can also come into the office. The problem with that being is, how do you fit everybody into an office, and how do you balance, you know, what size office you need? If one day you could have 100 people in the office and the next day you could have 20 people in the office.
Right. Yeah. I think we're going to be working to find these balances as time goes on. And I also believe that there are optical misperceptions or miscommunications that can happen. In my last job before I went full bore with entrepreneurship, one of my roles was to manage a process that involves three different departments of the company. And you made a point, and this is why I'm bringing this up, that even when you're really focused and you're doing what you call your heads down work, about once an hour, you need to stand up and move around. You need to have some sort of contact with somebody, whether it's for a change of pace, to get a little recharge on the energy because you have an idea you want to run it by somebody, whatever it is. And you like a little happy hour now and then. Maybe you want to grab lunch with somebody, something like that. So studies have also shown that when people who work in offices have the flexibility to stand up and move around, they deliver more than 2 hours and 54 minutes because they get that recharge. Just like, yeah, how do you charge a battery on a car? You run it. Same with a human being. Want to recharge a human being? Stand them up and move them around for a little bit. That'll recharge them.
So, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. So what you see, unfortunately, and I'm glad to see that these attitudes are starting to attrition out to a certain degree, because I dealt with this. My boss's boss, who for reasons that I've ranted about on other episodes, was just one of the most out of touch, obtuse individuals that I've ever seen. And I think the industry has benefited from the fact that she's retired from working. I don't care if she hears this. In fact, I think, believe me, there's reasons. So I'm going to save the rant. Go listen to some other episodes of Business Creators Radio Show. But let me just tell you the reason why this is surfacing for me. She made up these stories that everybody, and as soon as I hear everybody, I know it's usually just the person speaking, was complaining that I was never at my desk and I never answered my phone and I never answered my emails. Well, there were two things going on. Number one, even back then, I understood that about once an hour, you got to stand up and move the body around a little bit to recharge it. And if you're not capable of standing, there are other ways you can get physically involved to get that recharge going on. So I want to be clear to our listeners about that. Also, since I was working between two or three different departments to facilitate this, I, you know, would take myself physically over to the other department because I didn't want people ringing my extension. I was the guy who would actually sit there and let my phone ring if I just didn't feel like answering it. I'd get these, here's a story, and I tell this in my book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy. And I fictionalized the person's name, and I called her Diana, but there is a real person who is Diana. Every single day, and it would happen right around 2:15 p.m., she'd try and ring in. And she'd leave the same voicemail every day. Hi, Adam, it's Diana. Give me a call when you give a chance. Well, I never got a chance. Sometimes I'd look up 30 seconds later and she'd be standing over my cubicle wall looking down at me. I'd say, all right, you're here. What do you want? Or she'd try and catch me in the hallway. And I'd say, no, I haven't had a chance. What do you want? What I was trying to convey to her is that she had already been instructed through trainings that I not only developed but facilitated that they were supposed to be answering their questions via email to create a documentation, asking their questions via email, right? Not, well, asking and answering via email to create a documentation trail that could be referenced later. So I went a little Pavlovian. And I paid special attention to responding to her so quickly, she wondered if I was actually watching her type before she hit send. And then after that started to move the conversations where I wanted them to be, that was in line with the process. So the reason I bring that up just has to do with, I think we're also going to see changes in the offices out of necessity. Folks are seeing that the old way of measuring productivity by, well, we see that person, they're sitting upright at their cubicle, they answer every incoming call on the second ring, they return all voicemails within 10 minutes, and they respond to all emails within 5 minutes. That don't mean nothing. No. Seriously, it doesn't mean anything. It's a bunch of pro forma, and it creates what I also call activity to create the illusion of action. So I'd like to see a lot more of that. And one of the reasons I'm excited to interview you is because you can bring us some insights on how companies are going to manage this. But here's another thing I want to, here's another place I want to go, because we're about halfway there, still have a lot of time. What's going to happen in terms of how leases are done for office space? Companies are going to need to lower their rent expenses. They may be in situations where they're forbidden by law to have all their people even in the office. And once some of their employees get a taste of working from home, find they really like it, and then the company looks at their numbers, and in the cases where it works out, say, hey, our numbers are up and we don't have to maintain all this physical plan, but we do need some because we need to have board meetings. We need to have people in once a week, whatever it is. How's that going to impact the leasing and rental side of office space?
I think first and foremost, what we're seeing now is it's going to start with companies doing what we call blend and extend. So to lower your rent expense and then also maybe enjoy a few months of free rent, but you're not sure exactly what long-term your company wants to do. You can kind of kick, if you have an upcoming lease expiration date in the next year or 2 years or so, you can, negotiate with your landlord or, obviously your broker can negotiate with your landlord to extend the lease out, maybe a shorter term, 2 years, 5 years, it depends on the size of the organization. And what that does is, at least here in DC, it'll bring your rent down. You'll be able to get some concessions, update your space. If you wanted to kind of outfit it for the next generation of working or maybe a COVID-proof space, but also, lower your rent expense. So doing short-term extensions is going to kind of be where a lot of organizations might be headed in the next 12, 24 months as they kind of, this whole coronavirus starts to unravel and we kind of judge what the new space does look like. What do we need? From there, it's got to determine, how much square footage do we need? As I said, if you, have enough square footage for 100 people, which is, maybe 30,000 square feet or so. But you're realizing that 20 to 30% of those folks are indefinitely going to be working remotely, or even in the cases of some of my clients, it's even higher than 20 or 30%. I was just on the phone with a client and they got their survey back. They surveyed their staff and they had 57% of all their people that wanted to go 100% remote. Yeah. So, so does it really make sense to have that 30,000 square feet if you really need 10,000 square feet or so?
Exactly.
So, you can get, there's, without getting too technical, there's some different creative ways that we would look at that, and it's kind of on a case by case basis. It depends on a lot of different factors, but, looking at, can we give some of that space back? Can we sublease some of that space? If you give the space back, maybe you take 10,000 square feet, but you sign on and agree to the lease space with the landlord for a longer period of time to kind of amortize out those costs. I think that there's going to be changing. And at first when the pandemic first started, a lot of the conversation was, well, are people going to be taking more space or less space? More space so they can socially distance, space. To be honest, I think that might have been a little bit of wishful thinking on the behalf of the commercial real estate community. As the trend for COVID is, we're very hopeful that there's a vaccine in the short term being within the next 12 months, maybe even by the end of the year. I don't know that people are making space decisions based purely on whether or not they should be socially distant. If you were maybe in the middle of the space search right now and you decided, hey, we'll take on a few extra square feet so people can spread out, possibly. But I think most companies, from what I'm seeing, are just electing, if they don't have an appropriate office set up for socially distant, they're electing to make changes or, maybe not even return, certainly not return full force until, maybe next year.
Yeah.
So I think if anything, you might see some companies shrinking a bit if it's, a drastic enough amount of their workers that want to be working remotely full time, like not just for the next 12 months, but for the next 5 years. Then you might see some companies that are drastically shrinking their space, but, and that also obviously helps economics. Like I said, the hairy part is, how do you balance it if you have, space that can comfortably hold say 20 people, but you have 100 employees that kind of are wishy-washy on whether or not they want to come into the office. So that'll be interesting to see. And that's the challenge that we're working with some of our clients now, is to figure out, okay, what's an appropriate space size if you have people that want to come in, 20% of the time. How much space do you allocate to them? What does their space look like? Is it a shared office with another coworker who's going to be in another 20% of the time? Is it a workstation? How do we most appropriately lay that out based on the floor plan that the building has? So that's a fun challenge that is kind of, again, dependent on each company and how they work and how they plan to work in the future.
Wow, that is a lot to think about. And as I mentioned, I'm not only the host, I'm in the front row taking notes on this. I was familiar with the idea that they may want bigger spaces because they want to spread people out, which goes back to why they were looking at and are looking at the staggered model, where people come in on a designated day. So they have no more than 20% of their workforce in the office, but they get to come in once a week. So that's all well and good, but now you're adding some different layers to this and things that people are thinking about. And plus, I would also mention, what would they might they decide they need physical plant for anyway? They may have entire departments working from home 100%. So all they need is a meeting room where they can have the quarterly meeting or what have you. And what they will need is space for the IT. Because if you have remote workers, now you have to maintain servers and you need to have people in there making sure that certain privacy and security things are in place. For some companies, it's required that any work done for that company, especially when you get into things like HIPAA or certain protocols around the financial services industry, need to have different and extended layers of security, which can be realized through having them log into a specific network, having specific softwares on the computer they're using for work. So now you have you have 100 people working from home, which means you have 100 of your company's computers in those 100 homes, and you got to manage that centrally. So you might actually need more space to make that happen, and you may need to have more people coming in to do that because some of the IT work has to be done on site. You can rotate, who comes in on which day, and maybe there are some functions of IT, such as general, how do I log in and how do I check my email type customer service that can be handled through live chat, somebody sitting at home. But there are a lot of variables there, and I think what I'm really getting out of this is that as we try and find our way to the solution, we're going to discover that every company is unique.
Yeah, and you throw in government contractors as well. That's a
Yeah.
major industry here in the DC area,
Oh,
especially.
yeah.
And sometimes a worker can work from home, but other times they need to be in their office or in a secure facility like a SCIF, which is a special room that is designed for really top secret secure work.
Yeah.
So that's they're again a little bit different. In if a company wants to shrink their footprint, or most importantly their expense, I'll throw one more at you, one more scenario that you could look into, which is here in the DC area. Obviously downtown DC rental rates are the highest, and they're pretty high. They can get up to $60, $70. It could even be even more than that per square foot. Whereas in the suburbs, we can get rents in the $20 to $30 a square foot. So maybe have an office in DC, and then also a smaller office in suburban Maryland and in suburban Virginia. Your overall rent expense is still much lower because those two other offices, where your employees in Northern Virginia and your employees that live in Maryland, can go to check in, a couple times a week and still get that feeling of being in an office, but also can still work remotely. You cut down on their commute time, which is what they want anyways.
Yes.
Right? So you don't have to go into the city. Your office now becomes, your company now has a small satellite office, which is much cheaper than their huge office that they were going to lease in downtown. Now they've got a small satellite office in suburban Maryland or Virginia. And you can come in 1 day, 2 days a week, and the company still saves a lot of money, and everybody kind of gets a little bit happier.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, and that's another one that hadn't crossed my mind, is you don't have to have them all in the same office. So you could potentially trade off on having an entire building lease or an entire floor lease. There may be some folks who may need to report to the central location because you're dealing with top secret information like SCIFs and things like that. And we also know that our entire conversation does not necessarily pertain to certain things where there's no way they could do it from home. Like, for example, the companies that deal with restoring crashed hard drives, like Drive Savers would be an example of this. And I know because I've had to send hard drives to them twice over the years, is that they need to do that work. And here are just some of the protocols. It has to be in a dust-free environment. And I don't mean somebody comes in every day and runs a feather duster. I mean no dust, which means they are covered in body suits. Anybody's complaining about wearing a mask to go to the grocery store, that they should try working at Drive Savers for 5 minutes and see what kind of face covering they have to have. So when I say no dust, I mean no dust. And that includes the dust that comes naturally off your skin over the course of a day. That's what we mean by no dust. Second of all, if you need to send, and I'm just mentioning Drive Savers because they're the company I'm familiar with and they do great work. If you have to send your hard drive to Drive Savers because standard recovery techniques or whatever your local computer technician had the ability to do couldn't cover it, now you're getting into a label of forensics where you have federal government involvement, which means that has to be done in a secure dust-free lab. Those folks aren't working from home. I mean, on the plus side, they're so covered that I don't think a nuclear bomb, much less COVID, could get in. But at the same time, they can't work from home. So you're going to have to maintain a physical plan for that. But a company like that could also send all their customer service people home, or they could say, well, we found this other office space in the suburbs that we can spread out the 15 people, and we will have 10 of you in at any given time. The cool thing is, it's in the suburbs, you're not dealing with city traffic, and I have been on the Beltway, Adam, enough times to know exactly what that means.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm up in Northern Virginia or Maryland or something like that. I'm a half hour away from DC. Don't have to deal with the Beltway. And instead of being in some office building where the nearest place for lunch is 30 minutes away, just on the elevator to get down off the 75th floor, we're in a business park and there are 5 restaurants right there. So that person's saying, wow, shorter commutes. There's a parking lot. I don't have to pay $13 a day to park in a garage. And if I don't want to brown bag it, I have 5 options within a short walking distance, so I can actually spend my lunch hour having lunch and not traveling to fro.
It's yeah.
And the company saves money nice. Besides.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause I mean, having, just doing some back of the napkin kind of math, shrinking the downtown office space in favor of similarly sized offices in the suburbs is usually, I mean, I guess it depends on what your downtown rate is, but it can certainly result in a significant savings, or at least a similar cost, but maybe more convenient for employees. So that's an idea it's out there. I just thought of it, but it could certainly happen, and maybe we'll see companies trend that way if it makes sense for them.
Yeah, I also know something about this because back in 2003, I was strongly considering relocating to the Washington, D.C. area. In fact, I spent a week down there job hunting after I got my MBA and even got a couple offers and ended up turning them down because I caught the entrepreneurial bug just right at the same time. Some of the companies I interviewed with were like downtown DC, but a lot of them were actually in these little suburban areas. And on the one hand, I was thinking, damn, I wanted to be in Washington DC. I didn't want to be in Laurel, Maryland, but at the same time, I'm thinking, wow, if I were down in DC, it would take me 3 hours each way every day. I'm not sure I want that either. Because really, if I'm going to live in the city of Washington, D.C., there's really only place I want to live. It's on Pennsylvania Avenue in the 16 section.
Well, maybe in November you'll be able to throw your hat in the ring.
Well, maybe I'll do it right now. Maybe I should start running now because unless you're Donald Trump, you usually have to go through like four. You have to lose like four primaries over 16 years before you finally get a shot.
Yeah, so we'll look for you in 8 to 16 years or so.
Yeah, so let's see, about 2036, give or take.
Yeah, that sounds all right,
man. All right. Yeah, keep working in the area because I may want to outsource a lot of those people out of the West Wing.
They need some new office. We'll get them some office space.
There you go.
Off-site office space away from Pennsylvania Avenue.
Beautiful. I love it. Can you get one for me too? Because I'm not sure I want to be around all that all day long either. Yeah. I want to have my own iced tea brewer, not have to have my iced tea tested. So I just want to make it myself. That's a funny thing. The president's not allowed to make their own coffee.
Yeah, they
I'm not making that up. They're not allowed to make their own coffee.
Yeah,
they have to order it.
I think I saw that on. Did you ever see the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld? And
yep, I saw that one. Yeah,
that was a great episode.
Oh yeah, yeah, that Comedians in Cars, that was a hilarious series. I love that. So we have about 10 minutes here, give or take. And one other thing I wanted to get into is let's focus on you a little bit, because real estate is something that is going through some tumult right now, just simply because the financial picture of this company, of this country and the world have changed so dramatically so quickly. So what are some of the things you've been doing to stay productive and have some new business opportunities happening through your experience with this COVID pandemic thing?
Yeah, and it certainly has been an interesting time, but this is actually, really exactly why I got into real estate, which was to solve interesting problems, to solve problems for companies when they need it. I mean, the past 4 or 5 years or so, it's been the DC area has just had such a fantastic economy. Businesses were booming and everybody was really aggressively, taking on new space. And it was a fun time to be in commercial real estate. But now even, the past, let's say 3 or 4 months, I guess, I've been working on problems that we hadn't been working on before. Like, how do we get a tenant rent relief if they need it? How do we structure a downsize? How do you bring your staff back to the office? And then looking at the floor plan, it's like, okay, you got this $1 million liability every year, but now it's not quite as valuable as it was before. So how do we turn that liability into an asset? How do we keep your office still an asset? And what changes are going to need to be made in 6 months or in a year from now or in 2 years from now? So figuring out all that kind of stuff has been a fun challenge and kept me very busy over the past 3 or 4 months. And it's also opened opportunities for me. There's 51% of all CEOs and CFOs, at least in the DC area, are reconsidering their space needs. And they're going to, and 60% of them said that they might shrink their footprint, their next lease. So that just means that there is so much opportunity for me to talk to somebody, to talk to any executive or any decision maker who's tasked with the financial viability of their company and to figure out the problems. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people's revenue has been halted. I've worked with associations where $3 to $5 million a year would come from their annual conference. And if that annual conference was in April, May, or any time this year, basically, that's $3.5 million, $3 to $5 million that they're not going to get. So what does that mean for their bottom line? And how do we figure out how to offset that decline in revenue? So that's been what I've been working on. And for me, while working from home, it was a good opportunity to just improve myself in terms of being an entrepreneur and a business owner. It gave me a lot more opportunity to work on my business. Although I love my team at MGA, and it's a great firm, I still view my real estate practice kind of like I am the CEO of Adam Collins Real Estate, right? And so it was a great time to build my practice, build my presence, build my messaging, build my processes, and read and learn from my mentors. Every day at 12 o'clock, I got on a mastermind call for 30 minutes with the top brokers across the country, and we talked about what's going on in their markets, what problems are they solving, what problems do they have, how do they leverage this or that. And so for me, the past 4 months have been transformative in terms of adjusting my business, and certainly not perfecting it, but just improving where I can. And it's just been kind of rejuvenating this whole year. A lot of people are sitting at home, and I know that they're going through tough times, and it's certainly been tough for myself as well. But I figure if I can just sink myself into improving the business as much as I possibly could, there's no better time than the last 4 months to do that, and there's no better time than the rest of this year to continue to do so.
Here's another thing that, and this just occurred to me. We interviewed somebody else on the Business Creators Radio Show. In fact, I think a couple of our other guests have shared something. Let's say you have an entrepreneurial venture or what's classified as a small business, and you're looking for traditional loans from a bank, which we all know that ever since the Great Recession is basically, I mean, you're almost committing a criminal offense just even applying, is the way you ultimately get treated, because they're just looking for reasons to reject you. And if they can't find one, they'll just start asking you a bunch of stupid questions and delaying things until you just give up. And that's a generalization, but that's a story I keep hearing. Anyway, one of the things that I've discovered that the traditional banks look for when they're considering whether to issue an unsecured loan is whether or not you have an office space. A lot of companies, small business companies, where everybody works from home, will get a mailbox at a UPS store or something like that, so that their business has an actual business mailing address and none of that stuff is coming to their home and they're not putting their home address out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a database that tracks all the UPS stores and all the incorporate your company and list this as its mailing address type places. And if they see you're using one of them, they'll just disqualify you right there. So we see people investing in co-working spaces and making the time to make a physical appearance at that co-working space at least once per week. By some of the same metrics, you're considered to actually have an office if somebody can walk in somewhere and see your business license in a frame hanging on the wall above a space where you could sit down and do work. That's considered having an office. So you mentioned there's going to be a lot of empty space. Is that an opportunity to do something with some of that empty space?
Well, co-working is like if you're talking about like the likes of like a WeWork or
For example, yeah, something along those lines. And there are also some local ones and some private ones too.
I think that they've got, I don't know how much you follow WeWork, but they've got a whole host of issues going on with the company. They're doing some large reorganization. I think in the foreseeable future, the co-working spaces are going to struggle, as kind of a result of two things. One, the fact that there are people who are very concerned about this virus, and not likely to be around 200 strangers that are also working out of this kind of fishbowl. But also, I think, what you're talking about is like having kind of like an executive address or something, like a virtual
Exactly.
address.
Yeah, something that's not like in a UPS store, because I said they have a database and they track that stuff.
Yeah, I think because though that's not necessarily where they make their money, I still think that co-working can struggle, because that might be 200 bucks, but to get the actual because you could get the same, I think you could probably get that same feature if you paid, one of these co-working companies like $200 a month, but what they really want to sell you is like the $2,000 a month office space.
Of course they do. So they get you in the door, and
Yeah.
you look around and you say, "Wow, I've got a high speed network. If I upgrade, I can have an actual physical administrative assistant. I can have a boardroom. You get them in there so they can see it, and you get them to rent a piece of it so they feel a sense of ownership." And they say, "Wow, this ain't so bad." Yeah, that's typical upsell marketing. And my question is, with all these companies, they're going to be likely downgrading their footprint. That's going to leave a lot of space open in office buildings.
I think that it will. I think that it will, but I also think that we those co-working groups are also downgrading their space. We just saw WeWork give back 115,000 square feet in Manhattan. They just gave back 69,000 square feet in Baltimore. So we're seeing them give back space, and they're probably going to be more and more space that they're giving back as a result of lower demand. Because I think that that might be considered a bit of a luxury good, depending on what the business is. If I'm a business owner, I'm starting up, I'm a solopreneur, and the first thing that I'm going to do is to cut my office space expense because it's just me and I can go home. So it depends when this economy bounces back. If this economy were to bounce back by, like, let's just be incredibly optimistic, by like 60 days from now, right? Then maybe I'll go back. But if I continue to get used to working from home, I might be sluggish to then go out and spend, $500, $1,000, $1,500 a month on my own office space just for myself. It might be considered a bit of a luxury good. So, that might lag another 12 or 18 months until I'm like, until I feel like, all right, I need to bring on another employee, or there's something about working from home that really just starts to get to the point where I need to have my own space. So when I talk to co-working groups, and I've talked to a few owners of different co-working spaces, they're seeing a lot of their staff or a lot of their membership downgrade from the actual office to just having the mailing address, which has been hurting them, obviously.
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm just seeing a lot of changes along the line. I'm gonna turn the floor over to you in 1 second because I think people do need to speak with you urgently if this is something they're either in or considering being in. I just want to end on a rhetorical question. We're gonna have all this empty space in all these buildings, and you being in real estate know full well that if you have empty space, it starts to deteriorate on its own, so it could eventually become a sunk thing. Can we solve the homeless problem? I mean, I'm just asking that rhetorically. I don't want to get into the analysis because we don't have time. I mean, you know full well that if you have a house that hasn't been lived in a year, unless you have people moving in and out of there and activity happening every once in a while, the paint starts peeling off the walls and little things just start breaking. That's how these abandoned houses turn into hell holes, basically. It's just the nature of how things are. That's going to start happening where you can have the sixth floor, which is occupied just fine, and the seventh floor, which was left empty for 18 months with towels falling out of the ceiling and paint peeling off the walls and mold growing just because it's been left to its natural state. We have other uses for that space. So now what I want to do is turn the floor over to you for 1 minute. Anybody leaning forward who's listening, either live or on any of our streaming services, is curious about this, wants to discover more and work with an expert. Adam, how do people get a hold of you and what do they have to look forward to when they do?
I mean, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, is where I share a lot of commercial real estate news, mostly trends of office space here in the DC area, but also trends that happen globally or at least countrywide. So you can follow me at Adam Collins on LinkedIn. I'll be the commercial real estate professional there. You can add me, you can email me. I do have a newsletter that goes out as often as I can get it to go out once or twice a month. You can email me acollins@mgaco.com. It's M as in Michael, G as in Goldman, and A as in Associates, mgaco.com. And I will certainly add you to my email list. Or you can give me a call, which is Let's see, 202-627-1741. And happy to chat. And if anybody has a commercial real estate question or knows somebody that has a commercial real estate question, I will answer it to the best of my abilities or point you in the right direction.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Adam Collins, my fellow Penn Stater, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and an education.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and our upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. And while you're there, be sure to subscribe to your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.